Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. NFL Week 15, only 3 weeks remaining in the regular season. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
What's going on?
I just want to know, Payne, were you glued to the edge of your seat watching Monday Night Football as Philadelphia battled back from the depths of despair to salvage their season, at least for 1 week, against the New York Football Giants and a resurgent Eli Manning?
Not really. I watched the first half, and then the second half was on mute. That's about it. Didn't watch much of it. Didn't really pay close attention to it. It's tough watching what Philadelphia currently is right now. Just not a lot.
Which I'm not quite sure what they are right now.
There's no speed on offense, right? There's just not much there offensively. It's basically throwing to tight ends and running backs, and that's the only offense. And now you're without Alshon Jeffrey again. It's an ugly scene there.
Let's put it this way. If we are to cash our Philadelphia Eagles to win the NFC East tickets, it will have been an uphill battle and the ultimate grind and the truest illustration of what grind is in this fine business.
It's a crappy division, man. Two teams I think people had a lot of high hopes for in Dallas and Philadelphia, and it's just not turning out that way. It's pretty disappointing because, at least from Dallas's perspective, there's just a ton of talent out there. It's just not being utilized in the best manner. Let's just put that. That's my nice moment of the morning.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that seems to be an understatement of the century. Philadelphia on the road against Washington will not be a game that we cover on this very fine podcast today amongst our big five. So Payne, when we look at the schedule, we may as well kick things off at lovely Lambeau Field, where Green Bay is a 4.5-point favorite, total on the game 40.5 against the Chicago Bears. Those numbers, of course, courtesy of FoxBet. This will actually be the first noon kickoff at Lambeau Field between these two teams since 2008, as they've grown accustomed to playing in prime time. And I guess the biggest question when you look at these two teams in their current form, Green Bay, hey, they believe they're Super Bowl contenders. I think you and I are detractors for that, despite what Aaron Rodgers says. And all the Bears fans currently believing that this team, with a little bit of help and a little Mitchell magic, is going to find themselves firmly entrenched in the NFC playoff picture.
I would say both fan bases are a little delusional. I mean, you know, to me, when I look at them metrically, both teams are a little below average. And you look, both the Packers and the Bears are actually net negative in yards per play. And I think we've maintained for a while now that Green Bay isn't very good, relatively speaking, right? I know the record looks fantastic. And if you're in the business of, you know, being a coach or a player, you know, just win, baby. But for us, when we're trying to gauge the market and inefficiencies within it, you have to actually look at what these teams are doing. I'm also not buying the resurgence of Chicago, really. You know, this is just such a weird number to me, because when you factor in Lambeau Field, and you factor it against a division opponent that's familiar with both the stadium and the environment, you know, you're looking at Green Bay's home field advantage about 3.6, 3.7, right? And so this number is a little short, but you do, you know, just read the market here. It tells you Chicago's the side, which is really interesting to me.
Well, we talked about this game a little bit on Monday in terms of the look-ahead line and the adjustment here that Green Bay would have been a touchdown favorite had this game taken place last week. Of course, the national audience sees the Bears look to be a competent offense against the Dallas Cowboys, but that may be more an indictment of the current form for Dallas. Meanwhile, Green Bay against Washington, a game I don't think a lot of people paid attention to, given some of the marquee matchups and the heavy hitters that were on full display. But in that win, Green Bay doesn't score a touchdown after the first quarter and almost reverted to an offensive tendency that we saw early in the year. year, which leads you a little bit concerned, especially if the Bears defense gets one of their main run stoppers back and he can go out there and play a significant number of snaps.
It's extremely important for Green Bay to start fast, right? Execute that script. Another thing we've talked about for months and months now, and if you look at the Packers offense, they're operating pretty well with that script. Quarter one, they have a 55% success rate. That's third best in the NFL. Once that script wears off and you move to quarter two, the Packers offense drops to 16th in success rate. Then it kind of becomes adjustment time, right? And you're wondering if Matt LaFleur can kind of go into the locker room, digest what's been thrown at him for the first 30 minutes and kind of counterpunch. So far through 14 weeks, that hasn't been the case. And you look, Green Bay's below average in the second half in success rate. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers passing attack, 21st throwing the ball in the second half. So, you know, we've said this all season. If you're facing the Packers, kind of weather that early storm. If you can, I think you'll probably be in it the rest of the way. Now, where I think the Packers offense has been its best is when they just turn around and hand it off to Aaron Jones. And you look at Green Bay's O-line, they've done a very good job moving people up front, right? Sixth in adjusted line yards. It translates right now to the fourth most efficient ground game in the NFL. You look at some of the success rate metrics. 53% of all Green Bay running plays this season have graded successful. That's 5% above league average. But to your point and what you hinted at and where there could be a little wrench thrown in this game plan, and I think we outlined it extensively last week, the Bears have struggled to stop the run, but all indications are that big man, Akeem Hicks, he's set to return this week. And that's really important. It's a huge get back. In games where Akeem Hicks has started and finished, Chicago's allowed 35% of runs to great successful. In games that Hicks hasn't finished or played in, that number balloons all the way out to a 48% rushing success rate for opponents. So I think there's probably some question marks about Hicks' snap count and his workload. But it was an elbow injury. So you would hope, right? He's a professional. He's a hard worker. You listen to him. You would think he's been able to work on his cardio and fitness, right? It wasn't a lower body injury. He returned to practice actually about 2 weeks ago on the first. So he's going to have 2 full weeks to kind of get back in shape if he hasn't been doing it on his own. The other thing that kind of does suck here for the Bears defense, Todd, well, Akeem Hicks is up. Roquan Smith is down. Right. So now you're down your top two linebackers that you envisioned having when you put this roster together at the beginning of the season, right? With Smith and Trevathan. Maybe Aaron Rodgers finds some success throwing it over the middle. Maybe Jimmy Graham gets involved here a little more. I was looking at this first thing this morning. Right now, Chicago's allowed the third most receptions to tight ends. 81 receptions allowed on 108 tight end targets. And you also look how they defend running backs. Seventh most receptions allowed to running backs. And I think that's important to watch. It would appear Matt LaFleur woke up, right? And realized once again how much of a factor Aaron Jones can be in the pass game. We saw it over a month ago on Sunday Night Football where Jones has 7 catches on 8 targets for 159 yards in 2 receiving touchdowns against the Chiefs. And then poof, right? The following 3-game stretch, Jones has 1 catch. So that can't happen. Finally, you look last week, Jones was implemented back in that passing attack. He was targeted 7 times against Washington, caught 6 of them, averaged nearly 10 yards of reception. So if Chicago is going to load the box and stop Aaron Jones on the ground, Todd, you know, you have to make them pay on early downs, I think, using Jones out of the backfield as a pass catcher.
Yeah, 192 total yards from scrimmage for Aaron Jones last week. And as you mentioned, 58 yards of that came from the receiving variety. And you've seen Green Bay transition some of their offensive sets a little bit, using a lot more 3 tight ends than anything else. And the real guy that suffered as far as his workload has diminished has been Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who has become an afterthought for anything Green Bay wants to do offensively. Meanwhile, on the other side, Payne, of course, the Bears look a little bit better against the Dallas Cowboys. Mitchell Trubisky finally showcasing the legs that made him such a dangerous runner last year for the Chicago Bears, had been one of the elements that was largely absent for what Chicago wanted to do offensively. When we look at this Packers defense, we know that they're small and fast. We know that Adrian Amos has had a tremendous impact, the former Bear, on the back end, been out there for all but about four snaps. But there was a surprise scratch last week in Kevin King for the Packers. When I look at the Bears offense against the Green Bay defense, what are some of the key matchups that Chicago has to be able to exploit if they're going to be successful? You have to imagine David Montgomery should feature prominently in Chicago's planned attack for going after this Green Bay defensive front.
You would think maybe, right? And you would hope to see the Bears find some success handing it off every now and again. They're slightly improved when you look at some of the trending run metrics offensively. And, you know, to your point and why you kind of asked that question is the Packers' weakness is stopping the run. They get pushed around in the trenches. Green Bay's 32nd in adjusted line yards, 27th in defensive rush efficiency, despite facing a below-average schedule of run offenses. So maybe Montgomery can get going, couple end-arounds. I think Mitch needs to be included in that area of the game as well, right? It's playoff push time. It's balls to the wall. No conserving anything here. And we saw last Thursday, right? Trubisky used his legs a ton. Coming into the Dallas game, Trubisky averaged 2.3 carries per game, a fraction over 7 yards rushing per game prior to Dallas. That sounds ridiculous, but it's true. And against the Cowboys, Mitch tucked it 10 times, ran for 63 yards and a touchdown. I think if Trubisky is going to be a starter in this league for the next 5 years, his legs has to be, you know, something he uses to threaten a defense to a point where they have to game plan for it, right? And if he can be successful running the ball and defenses have to spy him, means one less guy making plays down to down, I think, and that should help him pass the ball a little bit, right? I also think the key here is when Mitch does throw it, deception is needed, right? We've outlined some of the Packers' struggles defensively against play action throughout this season. When offenses use it against them, the Packers' ability to kind of get pressure, it's really hindered. And I think not only that, but you look at some of these metrics, right? Mitch under pressure, he's got a 59 passer rating. That's 23rd among qualifying quarterbacks. You would think, you know, a guy like that with his kind of mobility, his strength, his size would be a little bit better. And why I think play action is important here, Todd, when you look at Trubisky, he's averaged 2.7 yards more per pass attempt with play action. And I think initially we felt like this Packers secondary was going to be like dramatically improved this season. You know, Jair Alexander was going to like take that next step in year two. And they did have that splash signing of Adrian Amos. Green Bay right now, 25th. An explosive pass defense. Let's see if Mitch can hit a few big plays off play action. I think the other concern, though, Green Bay down to down their pass defense. When you look at trending defensive metrics, Green Bay's 21st in passing success rate defense since week 9. Over that time, look at who they've played, right? It's Phillip Rivers, who everyone's, you know, attempting to send to the glue factory. They've gone against Kyle Allen in a snowstorm, Daniel Jones in a snowstorm, Dwayne Haskins last week. It's a little scary. When you start digging into some of these underlying metrics, you kind of see why this number is as short as it is.
Yeah, some real questions for both teams. Of course, the Bears need to win out, get a little bit of help if they're going to make the postseason. Green Bay, I'm sure, still believes a very viable threat to win the NFC North. If they can win this week, it'll set up a massive showdown potentially on the road against the Minnesota Vikings next Sunday. A massive showdown in the AFC South, Payne, will be taking place in Nashville, where it's the Houston Texans on the road to take on the Tennessee Titans. And you're looking at the Titans, a 3-point home favorite, number trending towards 2.5 right now at Fox Bet. Total on the game, 50.5. And of course, for the Tennessee Titans, it's been a tale of two seasons. Marcus Mariota couldn't move this offense no matter what he elected to do. Ryan Tannehill takes over, and now the team has won 4 straight, 6-7, 6-1 against the spread during that 7-game span. Tannehill leads the league in passer rating amongst qualified quarterbacks with a shade under 120. What have you seen from Tennessee? Do you believe that, hey, look, this is sustainable? They're going to be able to continue to do the things we've seen offensively, even for a team that's got so many problems in its defensive back seven.
It seems to be a perfect fit, right? This Titans offense in its parts. You know, Ryan Tannehill has changed everything about the offense. And some of the metrics that you kind of divulged there are pretty impressive. And honestly, this is well-deserved, right? Couldn't have happened to me to a better person. Right. Super happy for him. He's a fantastic human, works his tail off, tough as nails. And I think he's making the most of a second chance. And I know he was biding his time. He felt like he won the starting job in the offseason, but they weren't going to take it away from Mariota. And think about this, right? In weeks 1 through 6 with Marcus Mariota, Titans offense was 31st in passing success rate. Only 35% of passes were grading successful those first 6 weeks. It's 11% below league average. Since Ryan Tannehill took over and got the start week 7 in the Chargers game, Tennessee's number 3 in the NFL in passing success rate. 52% of passes have graded successful, right? 7% above league average. And, you know, Derrick Henry has come on for his, like, usual late season surge when defenses are kind of tired and banged up and he just batters through defenders. But I think Ryan Tannehill has made it nearly impossible right now for defenses to cheat run. And for two reasons. I was looking at this really in depth this week. If you look, he's made it nearly impossible, right? You're going to pay if you decide to cheat another man into the box. I was looking last week also. The Raiders decided to, like, hey, we don't believe in the Tannehill hype. I guess we're just going to load the box. It was like nearly 80% of runs Derrick Henry saw an 8-plus man box, and Tannehill just roasted him. But since week 7, Tannehill's hit 30 explosive passes. That's number 2 in the NFL, only behind the Rams over that stretch. And I think once defenses realized they couldn't cheat run as much, other than the Raiders, you know, Henry and the Titans have the most explosive ground game since week 7. So it's a big play offense right now. The second reason the Titans offense, I think, is humming right now with Ryan Tannehill, it's because he has been fantastic with play action, right? Arthur Smith, to his credit, and I know we had question marks about him coming into the season, he's making everything look virtually the same, whether it's run or pass. And Tannehill throughout his career has been very good as a play-action passer. But if you look how hot he is right now, of all qualifying quarterbacks, Ryan Tannehill is number 1 in yards per pass attempt off play-action, 14.1 yards per pass attempt. He's also number 1 in passer rating off play-action. So for the Texans, right, they need to be able to stop the run, right? When I look at Ryan Tannehill right now, he's just been dynamite, right? He has the league's best passer rating among all these qualifiers. You look last week against the Raiders because they were cheating. Ryan Tannehill, 276 yards using play action. That was 71% of his throwing yards. 276 was the second most yards on play action in a game the last 4 seasons. So, I mean, that's really what you're looking at. Can you stop Derrick Henry? If you can't, you're pretty much done at that point, right? At least you can stop one element if you can stop Henry. If you can't, then it becomes a play-action nightmare. You don't know what's coming. Everything looks the same. Other thing I think that's really worth mentioning here, Todd, the Texans' red zone defense. They are a sieve. Houston's 31st in the NFL in red zone defense. They've allowed 68% of opponent trips inside the 20 to result in a touchdown. They're trending even worse. This is the other good thing about the Titans. Number 1 in the NFL converting 73% of red zone trips into touchdowns, and they're actually trending better.
So do the Texans have any tactical advantage on the defensive side and a hope and a prayer of slowing down Tennessee in this kind of environment?
They need to get pressure. That's basically their only shot. When you look at the offensive line for the Titans, they've been dramatically better creating holes for Derrick Henry. They still give up a ton of pressure, and that's really, I think, the Texans' only shot, right? Can they get pressure? It's something they haven't been able to do themselves. Maybe you go all out and blitz. Try to get them in long situations, get them off the field here and there. If you give up a big play, hey, what the hell? You might give up a big play anyways based on how the Titans offense is operating right now.
When you look on the other side, then obviously knowing that the Texans defense probably won't be expected to have a big day, it puts an undue amount of pressure on Deshaun Watson and a Texans offense. Problem being is Houston hasn't exactly been the fastest starting team in the league, scoring just 23 points total in the first quarter this season. That problem was magnified on Sunday when they failed to score in the opening quarter for the 6th time in 2019 and almost instantaneously found themselves chasing a deficit in a flat spot against the Denver Broncos. When you look at Houston, we know it starts with Deshaun Watson. Paying Carlos Hyde has been a revelation of sorts as a viable running back for them, but will they have the services of Will Fuller out there to complement DeAndre Hopkins, or is it all Hopkins, Kiki Coutte, and Kenny Stills responsible for attacking a Titans secondary that last week had a number of backups, including a guy that they signed as a free agent out there against the Raiders?
So, Will Fuller practiced yesterday. Game time decision. And I truly believe it is. he's not going to be 100% healthy if he plays. He's been kind of battling this hamstring injury for a while now. But in a game this big, maybe he tries to give it a go. I know Kiki Coutte was up last week. He's been in Bill O'Brien's doghouse. He's actually been like a healthy scratch a lot of games this season. So he's going to have to step up. This game to me, right, it's like a full-blown illustration of like what year we're in and how far offenses have come, right? I mean, you look at this. It's a division game, right? It's this playoff vibe and atmosphere, division on the line, two familiar coaches, both from the same coaching tree of Belichick. Doesn't matter, right? Opens 47.5, now out to 51. And I think it's a lot to do with these matchups, right? It's hard to even say, I'm going to fade this move because now I have the opportunity to go under the key of 51. I think the Titans have some success offensively. And if you look, Houston probably should have some success here too, right? This Titans defense to me, it's a bit phony where it matters most, right? They struggle to get pressure. They struggle to stop the pass. They have also been horrific in the red zone. And you think like Vrabel, under the Belichick tree, like their whole mantra is bend but don't break. There's been a ton of break this season for Tennessee, right? Against the pass, you look, Tennessee's 24th in defensive pass efficiency. They've allowed 47% of passes to great success. Well, it's bottom 10 in the NFL. And I think why those numbers to me stand out and why they're even worse than they appear, Titans have faced the fifth easiest schedule of passing offenses. Now you get a top 10 passing offense in Houston. Some of the woes, I think, for the Tennessee secondary is because they don't get much pressure. Bottom third in the NFL in quarterback pressure rate, 31st in quarterback knockdowns. And I think that's a really important one that people don't talk about enough, right? If you're not sacking the quarterback, the next best thing is hitting him, right? Make him kind of peel himself up off the deck, let him know you're there. That's not happening either. And if you look at Deshaun Watson, I don't want to get into like a political thing. That's not where I'm going with this. But I think a lot of people think of Deshaun Watson as a guy that's mobile, right? He can improvise. He can throw on the run, right? He's this magician of sorts under chaos. Those things are true. But when you look at Watson, when he's kept clean, third best adjusted completion percentage among qualifying quarterbacks. So I think that's something to really look at here. He should have time to throw based on everything we're seeing right now. And the last area, the Titans defense, vulnerable here in the red zone again. Tennessee 30th in the NFL, allowing touchdowns on a 65% clip right now on drives inside the 20. They're trending even worse. Deshaun Watson of the Texans offense, top five in red zone touchdown rate, trending up. So that's kind of the one real matchup to look at here. Both of these teams, when they get inside the 20s, the offenses have huge advantages.
When you look at recent history in this series, games have not typically been all of that close. 9 of the last 10 meetings have been decided by 7 points or more, and the home team has dominated in a number of those games as well, covering 8 out of the last 9. Final thing on this game, Payne, when you look at the number, we saw it trending towards 3.5 very early on Monday. That didn't last for more than about 7 seconds. And now when we look at the market number trending more towards 2.5, have you seen anything of note on this particular game as it pertains to this side?
Have not, but I think, you know, there is this thought process that Houston wasn't overly prepared last week and didn't pay much attention to Denver. And so now you're getting a little value in the market in a big game around a key number, right? The look ahead on this was Tennessee -2.5. If you could have bought a cheap 3 earlier in the week when Tennessee was, you know, 3 -20, all of a sudden this perception of Tennessee being, you know, on fire and Houston just stubbing their toe last week, there was value at 3.5. Now you're at like 2.9-ish, 2.8. It makes it tough. If I had a gun to my head, I think you're probably going to see this trend back towards 2.5. I kind of believe that.
It's been interesting to watch Tennessee Titans line moves over the last couple weeks as the market adjusts or fails to adjust, depending on your perception of that in regards to Ryan Tannehill and this new look offense for some of the capabilities we've seen on full display. So for all the offensive fireworks that might be expected in Nashville, I don't think anybody's expecting that to take place Sunday night. When we go to Heinz Field, where it's the Pittsburgh Steelers playing host to the Buffalo Bills.
You're good at this stuff, by the way. That was good.
I'm trying. I'm trying to learn how to segue and go seamlessly in and out. You know, until we have sponsors for each individual game pane, I see a scenario, maybe it's next season, where every game has its own individual sponsor. Like game one, you want to be on that top tier, you get this. Game two, and you keep slotting down the road so we can continue to line our pockets with those lucrative endorsement deals.
I think what happened here is the rotation order gods said, hey, Todd's really, really come along with going in rotation order. We're going to throw him a bone here and have this high-flying game. Followed by a game with a total of 35.5 right now.
I mean, I'm never going to live that down, huh?
Just
the guy
be kind.
One week wants to go in a semblance of chronological order instead of the rotation with this damn flexing stuff, and I can't seem to live it down. That's the kind of world we live in, huh, Payne?
This is the 820 game. That's interesting.
Yeah,
the 405 game is also on the move right now.
Yeah, I've noticed a number of games that are currently on the move as we speak, including
one
total.
One
total earlier discussed as well for those scoring at home. When you look at this game, you mentioned the total 35.5. Pittsburgh right now a 2-point favorite at Foxbet. We know there's not going to be a lot of offensive fireworks, or at least the total suggests as much. These two teams towards the top of the league where it matters most, keeping their opponents off the scoreboard. Pittsburgh actually has the best scoring defense in the National Football League since week 3. And you look at what the Steelers are doing on the defensive side of the ball, a chance to make history and become the first team since the Steelers back in 1974 to lead the league in quarterback hits, takeaways, and sacks. When you try and unpack this particular game, Payne, where do these teams have to go to find themselves an offensive edge and maybe score more than 14 points?
I'm not sure. This is going to be a grinder. And very real money on the under at 37. And I know when you look at a total that low, it's like, man, it only takes one defensive score, one special team score. It acts as a deterrent, even though there is value in this number. And I think our core number was 34.5. So, you know, the market seems to agree with that number. There are some things that Buffalo's offense can do that would maybe make me a little leery going under this total. But I think when you're just looking, let's start with the Bills offense. The O-line, they got to get this thing figured out, right? Josh Allen's been under duress far too much. Pressured on 37% of his dropbacks, as mobile as he is, right? As large as he is, defenses are getting Josh Allen to the ground because they're sending multiple guys. Buffalo hasn't handled the blitz overly well. Right now, Buffalo has allowed an 8.5% adjusted sack rate, bottom third in the NFL. Now, when I look at this and I watch some of the all 22, some of this is on Josh Allen, right? He's not processing things as quickly as you'd like. He's not diagnosing things pre-snap overly well. And, you know, that's probably the big angle here because Allen has to be better than he was last week against pressure, right? Something has to give here. You would hope he learned something from the Baltimore game because Pittsburgh right now, it's another team that likes to blitz. Sixth highest clip in the NFL in blitz rate. They're number one in the league in quarterback pressure rate. The Steelers are. If you look at Josh Allen right now, completing less than 40% of his passes, has a 54 passer rating when pressured. That's really, I think, what this side of the ball comes down to, right? How will the Bills offense handle pressure? Can the O-line step up? Can, you know, Josh Allen do a better job reading pre-snap where he needs to go with it, get the ball out and get it out on time, actually, you know, that's big. It'd be nice if Singletary gets things going on the ground, kind of alleviate some of that pressure. If you said to me, you know, relatively speaking, where is, you know, Pittsburgh most vulnerable? And this is a very good defense right now. You would say against the run, right? They're still an above average run stopping unit. They're trending into the top 10. And Pittsburgh's also faced the fourth toughest schedule of run offenses to date. So it's not this weakness. It's just the weakest element of Pittsburgh's defense. So hopefully Singletary can do some things in the ground game to keep those guys honest. I'm not sure if he can. The part that we've kind of hinted at and you kind of drug out of me a couple weeks ago and why I would have an issue potentially going under in a total this low is I would think it's smart for Brian Daboll to continue using tempo and maybe even go a little faster, right? Don't allow Pittsburgh to substitute. And maybe the Steelers' defensive line starts to tire on a few drives or later in the game, and you can kind of capitalize on that. Daboll moved to the box, starting with the Miami game, right? He wanted to see the entire field to kind of help give Josh Allen the best play possible by reading, like, what coverage the defense was in, what defense they were actually using. So to do that, Buffalo was lining up extremely fast to kind of allow Daboll time to see what the defense was doing, then signal in the play. Since week 10, Buffalo is the second fastest team in first half pace. So you would think maybe that's the route they choose to go to kind of combat the Steelers' pass rushers here a little bit, Todd?
Yeah, I think that's the only way they can try and do it, because you mentioned how tenacious Pittsburgh has been. Bud Dupree and TJ Watt, the leading sack tandem in the NFL. And the other thing that Pittsburgh had been prone to for the last couple of years that we've been extremely critical of, for as good sometimes as they could be getting pressure, they'd give up the occasional big play. Well, that's kind of been eliminated completely with the addition of Minka Fitzpatrick. I think Steven Nelson has been a bit of a revelation. Chiefs fans have to be stunned how well he's playing in this defense. And if you can bring pressure and you're not giving up that 30 or 40 yard chunk play, it makes you so tough to try and break down. And you talked about Josh Allen. For as good as he has been in terms of eliminating some of the giveaways that plagued him through his first season, still not a quarterback that's elite by any stretch reading defenses, even with that advanced time. So if you're inefficient, you do have to worry that, hey, Buffalo may have some drives that last a minute, minute 10 seconds. But I guess on the other side, Payne, when we look at Pittsburgh, there's a real chance that some familiar faces might be back in the fold, Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner. At least as of right now, I would expect him to be out there. Vance McDonald in concussion protocol, and Coach Tomlin said that Jalen Samuels has been dealing with a groin injury, but Duck Hodges isn't being asked to do much. 16 of 19 last week against Arizona, ultra efficient. This is a Pittsburgh offense that lacks some of the creativity, but to the coaching staff's credit, they're finding ways to get their playmakers in space, taking those occasional deep shots to Diontae Johnson and James Washington. Even if it didn't show on the stat sheet last week, James Washington, the two biggest plays arguably, were both pass interference calls against the Cardinals.
Yep, exactly. When I looked at this, the first thing I kind of identified was that this is a game that's probably a big step up for Duck, right? You know, he came in from the bullpen for a relief appearance against Baltimore, showed some positive things, but in games where Hodges is starting, right, where defenses are actually game planning for him specifically, Duck has yet to face a defense that ranks in the top half of the league in defensive efficiency. Buffalo is number five. And you look at the Bills' pass defense. This is far and away the best pass defense Hodges has faced as a starter as well. So that should be interesting here. See if he can rise up against stiff competition. As you alluded to, it sounds like he's going to have some reinforcements on offense. James Conner and Juju Smith-Schuster practiced in full yesterday. Great sign that they're doing that on a Wednesday. Huge bonus there. You have to wonder if the Steelers will be able to run the ball a little bit against the Bills, right? It's really, I would say, week on week here, right? Someone's got to win that matchup. I know Tomlin, if you've kind of paid close attention to this, gave his three best offensive linemen a rest day on Wednesday. To me, that would indicate, hey, this could be a physical one on Sunday, and maybe that's the approach, run right at Buffalo with Benny Snell and James Conner. When you look at the Steelers on offense and how they run the ball, it hasn't been good. They're 30th in rushing efficiency, but they have played the fifth toughest schedule of run defense to date. So maybe, right, they're not as bad as the numbers indicate. Maybe with the O-line being rested a little bit and getting Connor back, you have a little punch in that area. The trending metrics aren't much better, but they have improved a little bit to below average in rushing success rate over the last month or so. You look at Buffalo's defense, 17th in defensive rush efficiency. That's where they're most weakest. They've played the 10th easiest schedule of run offenses. Now, we've kind of talked about how good Sean McDermott is and how good his adjustments are and how good his game plans are. He's aware of the defense's issues, right? He's tried picking up guys off the scrap heap to kind of throw into the defensive line at the tackle area. But there are some improvements being made. Over the last month, you look at Buffalo, they're trending up against the run, 14th in rushing success rate. And two of the four games in that sample come against the Cowboys and Ravens, two run offenses, top three in rushing efficiency. So I think when you look at that side of the ball, who's going to be able to kind of enforce their will, so to speak, along the line, right? That trench play is going to be huge here. Can Buffalo continue to improve and stop the run? If they can, then you're making Duck Hodges throw the ball into probably the best secondary he's had to throw against. You know, if you can't stop the run, then it probably becomes a little more difficult. That's an edge that Pittsburgh might be able to exploit a little bit.
Well, I have to think in a game like this, and we talk about all the time how important it is to stay ahead of the down distance,
yes,
even more paramount for Pittsburgh. If they're consistently in second and long, that's not going to set Duck up for a good game plan by any stretch of the imagination. And for everything that Buffalo has done, we saw it on full display when they were able to get the Ravens behind the sticks. They were just fine. But when Baltimore stayed on schedule, it created a real problem. And you look at Buffalo, 92 plays created for loss over 13 games, roughly 7 negative yardage plays per game. I mean, if they can get in the backfield and put Duck in second and 10, maybe second and longer, I'd have to think Buffalo is poised for big things, maybe create some short fields and see how this game unfolds. When you look at the number pain, we saw some shops open in that 1.5 range, not a ton of movement. You mentioned the under getting touched up a decent amount. What have you seen in this game as far as where the market's gone or anticipate maybe that it might move in the next 72 hours leading up to kickoff?
Yeah, and to your point there on the negative plays, at one point this season, a couple weeks back, Buffalo was number one in the NFL in that regard, creating negative plays. So if you can get Duck Hodges behind the chains and get him throwing into the best part of your defense, that's the goal. That's why it's set up to operate that way. When you look at the number here, open 1.5 at the sharpest, you know, one of the sharpest shops in the world, 1.5 right now. When you see this total continuing to trickle down a little bit, that's what I've seen. I've seen some money in come in on the under at 37. Which is a key number. It's not one that you see a lot, but like back in the day before offenses became dynamic, 37 was a key. So you missed that boat. But what I think is pretty interesting here is a game where Pittsburgh's probably not going to blow anybody out. I think you're going to see professional bettors really key in on Buffalo as a teaser leg this week, getting above the 3 and the 7 in a total, with a total in a game at 35.5.
Makes a ton of sense. Try and take advantage of any of the betting options that are made readily available to you on any NFL Sunday you possibly can. And the idea of getting the dog in this spot more than a touchdown, very compelling to say the least. Payne, when we look at America's Game of the Week between the Cowboys and Rams in the afternoon, this one number has moved all over the place. And as it currently stands at FoxBet, you're looking at the Rams, a 1.5-point road favorite here. Total on the game, 48.5. And we talked on Monday. The look-ahead number here had Dallas right around a 3-point favorite. I'm not sure there are two teams in the league whose perception has changed more over the last couple of weeks. The Rams, two short weeks ago, were only just 2.5-point road favorites against Arizona, and professional bettors were running over men, women, and children to bet the Cardinals as home underdogs in that particular spot. Last week, we know the pros were on the Rams against the Seahawks, but the general public wanted no part of backing the Rams in a must-win situation. Fast forward to what we're seeing this Sunday, and at FoxBet, 9 out of every 10 tickets are coming in on the Los Angeles Rams. Yes, we know the Cowboys have their biggest game of the season on deck, regardless of how things go against Los Angeles, but there's still that element of playoff revenge. There's extra time to prepare, playing for your jobs. I guess the most logical place to start is when you look at this number, are you surprised it's moved as much as it has, or do you think it was inevitable that it had a trend this way?
So I think that's really the most interesting part, right? There's a ton of matchups that are, well, I shouldn't say a ton, but there's a couple of matchups that are interesting. But when it comes down to some of these games, a lot of it's about price. And there were even look-ahead lines last week that were as high as Dallas -4. So now all of a sudden you're entering the market, and as we talk about this, Todd, some shops are out to Rams -2. It's been a 6-point adjustment. I know it's through the 0, but it's also through the 3. And there's probably not a ton of value on the Rams at this point. The question becomes, kind of to you, what you alluded to, does Dallas really need this game? And the answer is no. And I think that's kind of the glaring factor here, is that the Rams need this game like blood, and Dallas does not. And what I can tell you is the Rams are sharp, but it came in on Monday at 3. And then there was kind of another little grab at Pick'em. But I don't know. I hate to say it, because the Rams could go out there and win by 30 if they care, and Dallas does not. But it's about entering the market, and I have a tough time entering at this point. So, I mean, that's really where I'm at. I haven't done a ton with this game, but I think when you look at any Rams game, Todd, right, and we talked about this last week, and it bode very well for them, right, not just the spot or the situation or the price in the market, but when you look at these Rams games, it's like, hey, pressure matters on both sides of the ball. And so if Dallas does care here, right, you would think their offensive line is stacked and as loaded as it is going to provide some time for Dak in the passing game. Because, yes, the Rams are very good, number two in the league in pressure rate, but that's probably not going to be as good against an offensive line that's this talented, that's this good, that's had this much time to prepare. You would hope that Amari Cooper has had some extra time to get a little bit healthier. That would be advantageous. And then on the other side of the ball, you're looking at the Rams, and their offensive line has improved dramatically with Austin Blythe moved to center. They've also put David Edwards in at guard, and he's made a world of difference. And now all of a sudden the offensive line has been solidified a little bit. They've been much better in pass protection over the last handful of games. But they're going to face a defensive line that is uber talented, gets to the quarterback at the 10th highest clip in the NFL. So when you just look at the pressure metrics, drastically skewed from last week where Seattle gets none defensively and they give up a ton offensively, right? It's not that case this week. So if Dallas does care, if Dallas finally says, Jesus, like, let's be professionals here, they're going to have probably the advantage in the trenches here. And that would scare me when I'm entering the market now at two when the game was four last week. That's kind of my deterrent and why I just said, hey, I can't do this game anymore.
What have you seen from watching the Cowboys in recent weeks that's wrong with this team defensively? We know offensively, hey, they've kind of lacked an identity. Dak Prescott putting up big numbers. Ezekiel Elliott, I don't want to say has been an afterthought, but he hasn't been the focal point that he's been the last couple of years. But on the defensive side, there's so much talent, and we know Leighton Van Der Esch has missed a lot of time, but they just couldn't get off the field against the Chicago Bears, and I wonder if there's anything you're seeing from a schematic standpoint that's not easily corrected or that's real problematic that, hey, Dallas can spend some extra time in the film room and maybe get righted in their push to ultimately try and win this division.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you hate to say this because I think everyone anticipated that this defense was going to be very good. It was going to be an elite unit, right? They spent money to kind of re-sign guys along the defensive line to keep that as a strength. They thought they had their two linebackers for the next half decade, and Byron Jones was in a contract year and he was going to take a step up and deliver, and all of a sudden you would have this elite defense. Quickly, we trended away from that, right? If you remember during that hot 3-0 start, I suddenly was telling you, I'm like, Jesus, this defense is an abortion. What's going on here? And it's been the case all season. If you look right now, Dallas is bottom third in the NFL, both in rushing and passing success rate defense. And what it comes down to, and from what I've been hearing, is the defense is very basic to figure out. They're going to tell you what they're doing pre-snap. And if you have a quarterback that can kind of figure things out pre-snap, you're going to know where the ball needs to go. And we saw that. If Mitchell Trubisky can do it, I would think Jared Goff and McVay have the ability to do the same thing. So there hasn't been a lot of imagination defensively from what I'm seeing on the All-22, from what people, football people smarter than me are saying. There just hasn't been that imagination. And I think this is probably something, again, we're not having the best NFL season, so it's not we're not gloating, right? We always want to be ahead of the market. We've been ahead of the market on assessing this Dallas defense. And I know defense and Rod Marinelli isn't the clickbait that what's wrong with Dak and the Clapper and Zeke Elliott, right? It doesn't get as much eyeballs or clicks on it. But Rod Marinelli's defense has been horrific. Like, this is really a problem. And no one's saying anything. Great guy. But this Dallas defense has been horrible. And people need to start focusing on what's going on here defensively, because I don't know if they're going to get this fixed. I really don't. And I think a lot of it is scheme. And you heard Troy Aikman last Thursday be like, man, I'm looking at this defense for the first half. They just tell you what they're going to do. And that's, I think, pretty scary and pretty indicative of what's going on with this Dallas defense. Hopefully you would think with a few extra days that there's going to be a couple more wrinkles here defensively for the Cowboys.
One last thing, and I can't always get you to rub the crystal ball and get the answer that we're looking for.
No,
but as we've seen this.
Go ahead.
As we've seen this number go, even see a two out there, is there a chance that you think this number could even get as high as 2.5, given all the momentum and public sentiment? Because this will be the most heavily bet game of the entire day, I would have to imagine, going into Sunday Night Football, knowing that it is in that 4:25 Eastern time slot. And you look at the games it's up against head-to-head. Atlanta, San Francisco doesn't move the needle. Jacksonville, Oakland, Cleveland, Arizona.
Kyle Shanahan against his old boss, Dan Quinn. That doesn't move the dial.
and the Vikings Chargers. I just wonder if there's not an appetite for the dog right away, if there will be a potential in the market to maybe even buy to 3 with the Cowboys, something that I would have thought of was preposterous to say last Sunday night when this number opened.
Man, I don't know. I would think at the very least, you're probably not getting to 3 here, right? Because it opens up an avenue of guys who took 3 with the Rams have an ability to now take 3 with Dallas. I don't know if you want to leave yourself that susceptible. You would think 2 is probably the cutoff. I'm not sure. That one could be above my pay grade.
Fascinating to watch to see ultimately where this number finally settles, given such strong public support. I imagine contrarians
will
be out in droves.
9 out of 10 tickets, huh? That's wild.
Especially in a Cowboys game against Dallas. Yes. For a Rams team that nobody wanted a part of last weekend. So, hey, maybe the Seattle Seahawks defense, which has been the ultimate cure-all for Jared Goff and getting his confidence up, including the incorporation of all those talented Rams receivers, has people believing that this team will once again continue to resemble the team that came up just short winning the Lombardi Trophy last year. From the games on Sunday, Payne, into a game we'll see transpire tonight, which is Thursday on Thursday Night Football. One team playing out the string, the other playing for home field advantage throughout the AFC. And this number has taken off like an absolute rocket, with Baltimore now a 16.5 point home favorite at Foxbet. Total in this game, 45, as they welcome in the New York Jets. You can only hope that Le'Veon Bell elected to pack his bowling ball for this particular trip if there are some good lanes that he can take part in Baltimore.
They told him to stay active. They don't stay active. This is like,
I like
this,
it.
He almost
like
took
it.
The
he
approach of Bill Belichick, right? If we're recording things on the sidelines, we're going to have him in Patriots gear just in case we get caught and we'll be like, hey, we're not this stupid. Le'Veon went out there in the nice orange leather pants so he could be spotted from afar. And he'd be like, hey, listen, if I was trying to hide, I wouldn't be wearing orange leather pants here to bowling.
Yeah, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, I don't care how aggressively you bowl. It's not exactly defined as physical and strenuous activity. So if he's out there, the Jets don't seem to have a problem with him. For all Le'Veon's baggage, I mean, I think it's a story that's completely overblown, to say the least. But
did you see the
way,
tweet?
Le'Veon's tweet or other tweets
Le'Veon's
that came in
tweet.
Subsequently
he kind,
thereafter?
He kind of trolled some people because somebody asked which flu game was more impressive, Michael Jordan's 38 or Le'Veon Bell. Apparently put up a 251 on Saturday night.
They say he's a good bowler.
Yeah.
I mean, everything out there said the guy has some legitimate bowling
and,
talent.
And he responded, they don't call me a pro bowler for no reason.
Hey, you got to love some of the creativity there and the banter that goes back and forth. But
Adam Gase didn't find him either. And Adam Gase is usually, at least in Miami, was a quick trigger to find some guys. So pretty interesting dynamic there.
I think they had to be pretty cognizant of what was going on. And it wasn't as though he completely discarded doctor's orders, to say the least. Man wanted to get out there, stretch his legs. You just hope that he didn't have his fingers in the bowling ball going right to the nachos in the mouth trying to exacerbate that flu bug. But tonight, Payne, the biggest question, I think, when you handicap this football game, the health of Lamar Jackson. He says he's fine. Quad injury showed up on the injury report. But in reality, this is the chance for him to make the final statement and cement his MVP candidacy against the Jets team. That calling them lackadaisical in the back against the pass might be giving them too much credit. But they are, however, one of the league's best run defenses.
So, I mean, I think there's some things to unpack on this side of the ball, and it probably determines which side gets to the window, right? It is elite versus elite here with Baltimore's rushing attack versus the Jets' run defense. And we've kind of discussed what the Ravens are, and it's obvious at this point, right? It's they're the most run-heavy team in the NFL. About 56% of the time they run it, and they've been very efficient running the ball, number one in rushing efficiency, despite the entire world knowing they want to run. The Jets defense, it's been the one thing that they've really been good at doing is stopping the run. Number two in defensive rush efficiency, number one in rushing success rate defense. It's pretty staggering. I was looking at this. 36% of runs have graded successful against Greg Williams' defense. That's 12% better than league average. So he's done very good. Jets are also number one defending explosive runs, only giving up 26 runs of 12 yards or more all season. So you would think, right, potentially, the Jets defense matches up okay. You know, we also have Lamar with a quad injury. Will they let him run as much? It's a good question. I don't know how healthy or unhealthy he is. I think he's probably fine. It is a short week, so he hasn't had a ton of time to recover. You're probably going to know pretty quickly, right? How does he look? Is the offense handing the ball off more to its running backs than having Lamar keep it? We'll be able to tell pretty quickly. I don't think that's the case. And I think the other thing that stands out a little bit here about the two, you know, the Baltimore run offense and the Jets run defense, there's a little bit of a difference there, right? If you look at how good the Ravens have been and who they've compiled these numbers against, it's the third toughest schedule of run defenses. The Jets rush defense, they face the fifth easiest schedule of run offenses, and it's a short week. So they haven't had, you know, the necessary time to prepare for an exotic run offense. And so I think that becomes really interesting. It could be tougher here, stopping the run, like, you know, as opposed to what it's been from them throughout the course of the season. There's also some injuries to factor in here. We know Skur is out at center. His replacement has actually been better over the short sample size, but it looks like Lamar's left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, is going to be out in this game with a concussion as well. There's also some familiarity here in terms of Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense against Greg Williams' defense. Back in week 17 last season, and this probably bodes well again for the Ravens, Greg Williams was still with Cleveland. The Ravens put up a shade less than 300 rushing yards as a team. Averaged 6.3 a carry, 10 explosive runs. Lamar had 90 rushing yards himself, 2 rushing touchdowns. So it'll be pretty interesting to see if they can get that ground game going. I would think that the Ravens are going to have some advantages through the air, right? And maybe that's the approach we see early, Todd, right? Throw it to set up the run. You kind of took a jab at that Jets pass defense. They're going to be without Jamal Adams again. They're 22nd in defensive pass efficiency. They face the very easiest schedule of passing offenses. So Lamar could have some advantages through the air if the Jets ultimately shut down that ground game.
Well, we know Greg Williams isn't afraid to bring pressure, so hope Lamar is up to speed on his hot routes to get the ball into his receivers' hands, whether they be the tight ends or Marquise Brown. Let them make plays in the open field and take some of those short catches for big gains, as we saw last week with Hayden Hurst. And some of the numbers there. On the other side of the ball, Payne, clearly the Baltimore Ravens defense has an advantage. And this has been, and I continue to say, and we do on this podcast, that they don't get enough respect given Lamar grabbing all the headlines. But the Ravens defense has allowed 17 or less points in 7 of their last 8 games, kind of becoming an unheralded group that's continued to get better, especially in the secondary, where they've held their last 5 opponents to less than 200 yards passing. While the Jets can't run the ball successfully or consistently, and while the chemistry appears to be emerging again with Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson, as Anderson has gone for 86 or more receiving yards over the last 3 games, how do the Jets expect to sustain drives and move the football with regularity against a Baltimore defense that's been a tough nut to crack?
So first, let's get to kind of the philosophy of Baltimore. And you look at how they decided to build their team, right? And I know pressure is very important, but in 2019, right, it's all about defending the pass because teams are just throwing so much. And they kind of realized they weren't going to be able to re-sign some guys this offseason. Smith went to the Packers. Suggs went to Arizona. You lose your linebacker. And so they lost 3 guys in their front 7. And so the pressure rate hasn't been great, but they've tried to manufacture it by blitzing a ton. They blitz at a 54.5% clip. But what they did was they stacked up their secondary. They went and got Earl Thomas. Jimmy Smith came back healthy, and then they went and traded for Peters. And so those guys are allowing them to defend one-on-one and send a ton of blitzes. And I think that's kind of leads in to where this side of the ball will be decided. The Jets' O-line has to figure out how to protect Sam Darnold. It's been a problem all season. You look at Darnold, 42% of the time he drops back to pass, he's been pressured. A lot of it is personnel issues, right? The Jets don't have a ton of talent up front. A lot of it is Gase not being willing to keep guys in and help protect, because that wouldn't be his style of offense, right? That's one of Gase's struggles, right? He does have a little bit of an ego. It borders past confidence. It's not necessarily what's best for his team, right? You would think it'd be better for his offense to keep your quarterback upright. He had protection issues when he was coaching Miami. He really refused to bring guys in and help. And why, you know, you think about this, right? It's a short week. You're facing this exotic Baltimore defense, again, that loves to blitz, Wink Martindale. And this is nuts to me. I don't think I've ever seen a team blitz 55% of the time. It's bananas, but that's
love
what's
it.
Going on.
Love it.
Right?
Get after the opposing quarterback. Make him uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so it's on a short week. And if you remember that Monday night game with added time against the Patriots, Todd, New England constantly got to Darnold, made him uncomfortable. And why I'm bringing that game up, after the game, I was listening to Belichick's press conference. He was saying that his defense did a good job blitzing what they saw, meaning the Jets formationally. They didn't go into the play saying, hey, this is going to be this specific kind of blitz. They just kind of on their own blitzed based on what the formation told them pre-snap. And Wink Martindale said something oddly similar this week that I was paying way too much attention to. But he said, hey, we really have to focus on the Jets formationally. So that's going to be a really interesting thing here. So, you know, we have to keep an eye on Darnold tonight, how much time he has to throw, how the Jets O-line handles that Ravens blitz. You'll look at Darnold, 28th among qualifying quarterbacks in passer rating under pressure, completes about 46% of his passes when the heat's on. So that's really what matters here. Can the Jets defensively stop the run? If they can't, can Lamar exploit them through the air? Because there is an advantage there. And then offensively for the Jets, can they keep Darnold upright? Can they handle that blitz? Can Darnold handle pressure? Those are all the key points here. The total to me, Todd, is a little bit interesting. It's ticking up. But when I was looking at some of the pace metrics, right, Ravens are the slowest first half offense since week 10. Jets this season, 28th in first half pace. So it's going to be a snail's pace. And if Baltimore is able to run the ball a little bit, nothing wrong with the clock continuing to tick after, you know, 3, 4, 5 yard runs.
Well, let's hope Lamar has 5 touchdowns in the first half for me.
I
selfishly,
heard you have a big fantasy playoff matchup.
Well,
this
apparently
week.
My opponent has been singing it from the hilltops, whether it's social media, his radio show. I mean, I like to kind of live my life in the shadows, and I don't mean in a shady way.
You were
just don't
us
like
a quarter
to...
mile at a time. I thought you were a big Fast
no,
and the
it's
Furious
not a quarter
guy.
Mile at a time. It's a mile at a time. Let's not kid ourselves. But, you know, he's out there looking to crowdsource who his quarterback is going to be in this matchup. I hope that Lamar goes out there and hangs 50 fantasy points on him and can banish the notion of Cinderella trying to get to the championship in the high-stakes fantasy league.
She's trying to get the football gods on his side. A little good karma action going. How are your matchups looking this week? No one cares to hear, but tell us anyways.
Can I let you know on Sunday? Can I let you know on Sunday how Lamar performs against the Jets, how Christian McCaffrey performs against the Seahawks, and a trio of wide receivers that's overachieved all year, and Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin, and DJ Moore that need to rise to the occasion, along with George Kittle.
Your team's loaded, but the matchup sound a little tough, and you got some interesting elements there with
I got a hole at RB2 I've been dealing with all season long. So if that can finally correct itself, John Gruden do the right thing, bench Josh Jacobs, then we're in great shape.
So if Lamar goes out and gets you 50 tonight, you're feeling pretty good. It's tough to beat a team if you can get like 75 combined from Lamar and CMC. That's a heck of a two-man weave there.
Well, let's see. Those boys have not let me down yet. Hopefully they're refreshed, reinvigorated off a bye week, and they'll be able to get things headed in the right direction and get the team to where
if
it needs to go.
If you lose here, you're not going to hear the end of this for the next week or so.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. Given my performance on Lock It In and everything else, I don't even want to think about it. So we're thinking positively in this campaign, nothing but positive thoughts.
By the way, I can attest that Monday you missed, you were not at the bowling alley Sunday night. You were truly sick.
Little Powerade and a little chicken noodle soup became the ultimate cure-all to try and get my head right and healthy.
I don't envision you being an orange leather pants guy.
No, I don't actually own a pair of orange leather pants or a jumpsuit that has my name on the
side. You're coming to Miami for the Super Bowl. You better stock up, big guy.
I was going to say, I may have to try and bust out a few unique wrinkles to spend 8 days down there in your neck of the woods and take part in some of those festivities. But either way, when you look at Thursday night's game, some interesting trends here. Not really meaningful, but still fun to share. The Jets have been dreadful away from MetLife Stadium. A 33% success rate covering on the highway over their last 21 games, 7-14 mark. But Baltimore, even for all their success at home, they haven't exactly been great at the betting window. Just 8-15 against the spread the last 23 they've played in their own building. I give you all of that to give you this. The best bet brought to you courtesy of FoxBet, where the biggest name in sports is now the hottest name in sports betting and one of the fastest growing betting apps out there. Whatever sports you like betting on, FoxBet has you covered. You can download the app to your smartphone from absolutely anywhere. Check the odds, check the props, check the futures. Be in tune with everything going on in the betting markets. Unfortunately, you can only place real money wagers if you live in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. FoxBet, make the call, download the app today. And for those folks in the Jersey area betting on tonight's game, I know there's a laundry list of Lamar Jackson-centric props to maybe help you drown your sorrows. But Mr. Payne, a modest win streak around these parts. Where are we going to keep that train on the tracks?
Todd, I know you're concerned about bet volume with some of these 4 o'clock games. Let's try to help that out a little bit.
So you're sending our listeners, they have to wait through the early kickoffs. They got to wait till the afternoon to get their action fix, huh?
Is that a thing? I know you're a previous forum guy. Is that a thing?
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Let's cut this off before we get down a path that you're not going to be able to come back from as you alienate people, being the elitist that you are from time to time.
I didn't know that was a thing. I'm just looking for a winner. Yeah, I'm just looking for the most value.
If only people knew.
I didn't know there had to be like a time restriction
more about
on these games.
You know, if only people knew more about your lifestyle.
Anyways,
God.
4:05 kick. My apologies. Let's go with.
I didn't say you had to apologize for it. I just said people had to wait to try and get their investment in, you asshole.
Let's focus. Focus here. 3-3-2. The LA Chargers. +3 on the buy. Let's call it -125. Still like it at that number, at that price, with the total at 45. Once it starts trending up towards like 47, then there's an actual debate on whether it's worth buying or not. But as long as this total is sitting there around 45, still feel like 3 -25 on the Chargers is a very good price. And there is some cheaper out there because you're looking at Minnesota juiced a little bit. And you know, this is tough. I don't know the best approach on when to go here. Obviously, I think Adam Thielen is going to play. He's yet to be upgraded on the screen. That could impact things a little bit. So it's like, do you wait? Or are the sharpest guys in the world going to gobble this price as the limits rise today? Tough debate. I would try securing the 3, but there is a possibility of Thielen having a little impact when he eventually gets upgraded along with Xavier Rhodes and some of those other guys. I just think there's value in this number, right? I like what the Chargers defense is doing since the return of Derwin James. You look the last 3 weeks, or the 3 games rather. I know there is a bye mixed in there. So the past month, which included 3 games, the Chargers secondary is defending passes very well. 4th best over that stretch. And that includes a game against the Chiefs and Patty Mahomes and the red hot Drew Locke. So they got Derwin James back. They got Adrian Phillips back. It's really improved that secondary. You now have all the parts on defense that you envision coming into the season. And I think it's trending towards a very, very good defense. And I think, Todd, just when we talk about the value in this number, think about what these two teams were coming into the season. Think about kind of the perception of these two teams. The Chargers were projected to be a significantly better team just based on win totals and future pricing. And we just haven't seen that Chargers team because you have Melvin Gordon holding out for large stretches. You have Russell Okung missing the first 2 months of the season. You have Derwin James and Adrian Phillips going down. You have Gordon being out on the defensive side of the ball. But right, these players are all now back. And so I think you're going to look at these teams moving forward as being damn near similars. And so that's, I think, where we find value in the Chargers here, especially at 3-25. So I think there's good value in that price.
Let's hope the Vikings fans stay home. We don't need a home field atmosphere Los Angeles, which you know you're going to get. You're going to get 75-25 purple
people
and gold.
Off, but I think if you have any chance to get out to San Diego this time of year, living in Minnesota, you're going to take that opportunity.
Well, that's not pissing people off. That's just being honest.
I didn't know if I was going to alienate
unless you're a fan of ice fishing. Unless you're a fan of ice fishing, you're getting the hell out of the cold. Never offended me growing up in Chicago. Hey, do you want to leave Chicago to go somewhere where it's sunny and warm during December? Fuck yeah, get me the hell out.
I didn't realize this until you told me, I think, when we were breaking down the Penn State-Minnesota game, was it that wasn't a sellout because that Saturday was the first day of hunting season.
That's what it plays a big role. And let's not kid ourselves this time of year. It's hockey country for a reason, and it's all about the U in terms of college hockey. That was also a big part of it as well. I believe it was the Golden Gophers' first hockey home game that weekend.
All right, let's go with the Chargers, 3-3-2, plus 3, minus 25 officially, and let's get the heck out of Dodge.
All right, anything else you want to share with our listeners before we get all of this fun stuff and the rigmarole again on Monday night with the Saints playing host
to the Colts?
I should
have done this right before the best bet, because that's obviously the section everyone listens to most. But you just did jog my memory. Right now, I've been talking to a couple of other podcasters, not in our space, but and we've had a couple people email us and send some messages. There's been some issues with Google Podcasts, Google Play, iTunes, a lot of people not being notified. And it's been a huge problem because I know a lot of podcasts, I guess, have been dipping in listenership a little bit. Do us a favor, just so you make sure you get these alerts. Whatever your preferred podcast platform is, whether it's iTunes or Google Podcasts, unsubscribe and then subscribe again really quickly, because I think that's going to negate some of those issues of being notified. I'm hearing that that's actually worked pretty well here over the last couple of days or so. That's it. Let's get out of Dodge.
Look at you with that. Look at you with that valuable life advice.
That's what I've been hearing. People have been bitching about it. And I know we've gotten a couple emails about it. And I said, let me look into this. And then that's kind of the solution that was given to me that seemed to have worked. Because I noticed I wasn't getting them either.
Yeah, no, that makes a couple of us. I mean, fingers crossed that our listeners are getting this in a timely manner. They have a chance to move on the best of the number. We know the NFL market not nearly as fluid sometimes as what we've seen in college football, but you wouldn't know that last week by the best bet. San Francisco plus 3 juice wasn't available much longer after the podcast was officially released to the public. For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. If Payne's finally finished talking, I think we can close up shop. All right, I'll take that silence as the word from above. Best of luck to all of you, our loyal
silence
listeners, this weekend with all of your NFL and with all of your NFL investments for week 15. Come the afternoon before Sunday Night Football kicks off with a Chargers ticket in hand, we'll see you at the window.